Ascent Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Innovation Mindset, 8 Essential Steps to Transform Any Industry, by Lorraine Marchand, narrated by Kim Nemi. Foreword, Spencer Razkoff. What Lorraine Marchand has written in this book is nothing short of, well, innovative. The detailed roadmap that follows, packed with engaging anecdotes and practical planning processes from companies of every size and scale, will provide any individual or team the tools needed to create the perfect environment for innovation. Discussing notables and novices alike, Lorraine's examples and commentaries are relevant and fascinating. Lorraine is a dynamic force, writing on a subject that she not only espouses but embodies herself. As the GM of life sciences for IBM's Watson Health, a strategist for Big Pharma, a repeat startup founder, a director at NIH, and a professor at Columbia Business School, she has a breadth of experience and insights that have empowered her to innovate and pivot throughout her career, just as she guides businesses to do. She will equip readers to ideate unique startups, learn comprehensive steps for customer research and advancement, and be inspired to foster innovation throughout every stage of a company's growth. The examples and actionable techniques laid out in the following chapters will set up innovators of any age for success, and would have been a welcome tool in my own arsenal when I began my professional career. I've had the good fortune to be involved in a number of inventive companies such as Hotwire, Zillow, and Picasso, that successfully disrupted massive sectors of the economy, including travel, real estate, and the vacation home market. I'm also an angel investor and have invested in more than 100 startups. Lorraine's laws of innovation are right on. In fact, I give similar advice to my portfolio companies and use some of her laws to determine where to invest. First, Lorraine says that a successful innovation must offer a solution. I agree with this completely. This was the case for my 3 successful companies. Hotwire, founded in 2000, changed the way people booked travel. Internet-assisted travel booking was still new, and hotels and airlines were changing the way they thought about inventory and distribution. Consumers, too, had few options for booking at that time. We created Hotwire to solve both those problems, and 22 years later, the brand is still going strong. I agree with this law of innovation so much that it is one of my criteria for investment. If a company can't easily define a problem for me and show me they are solving it, I won't invest. I've also had deep experience with Law 4, 100 customers can't be wrong, and Law 5, be ready to pivot at any point in the process. At Zillow, a key to our success was always listening to customers. Lorraine is a proponent of 100 interviews, talking to people of different demographics, but all prospective customers. This is critical, and such practices formed the brand and foundation of all of my companies. At Zillow, this practice was continual. We talked to customers constantly. In an annual survey of thousands of home buyers, sellers, renters, and owners, in one-on-one interviews and small focus groups, and on social media. Those insights formed the basis for ongoing product and marketing decisions and are a key to any company's success, big or small. I've also seen the pivot, or 3P, law in action. And this can be the toughest one for a startup founder or a leader of a mature company. When we launched Zillow in 2006, it was merely a voyeuristic toy, a way to bring information transparency to real estate. But through product innovation and acquisitions, we expanded Zillow into new businesses such as rentals, mortgages, and title and escrow. We also morphed from a media business that was dependent upon advertising into a transactional business that helped people complete real estate transactions. There were pivots and unpivots and repivots along the way. But as we navigated these advances, we followed consumer preferences and grew the company enormously. It wasn't easy by any means. Lorraine's book gives guidance for how to know when it's time to pivot and how to do it well. The innovation mindset is an excellent insider's guide, complete with planning templates and Lorraine's innovation must-haves. Whether founding a startup or creatively problem-solving within a large corporation, seize the moment. Be curious, be creative, be adaptable, and always be so. I wish you well on your own journey to innovation. Spencer Razkoff, co-founder and former CEO, Zillow, co-founder and executive chairman, Dot.LA, angel investor in more than 100 companies. Forward, Laura Manis. As the first female CEO of the North American flagship agency of Havas Group, I've spent the majority of my career fostering a culture of continuous innovation and creating deeper meaning for some of the most recognized companies in the world, all the while breaking the tired old Mad Men era traditions that no longer serve the advertising or any other business. Over the past 3 decades, I have often found myself one of the few females in the room, be it in meetings with staff and clients, in the boardroom as a director, or in the startup world, where I consult, advise, and invest in what I believe can be world-changing ideas. I know Lorraine Marchand has had the same feeling of being outnumbered, and I also know that despite the challenges that women have been facing in the workplace since the days of Don Draper, Lorraine has risen in her industry as a new products development specialist, a consultant, an educator, all the way to her current role as a general manager of IBM Watson Health, where she is helping develop new ideas for no less an innovator than Big Blue. An innovation mindset, much like the one that Lorraine helps you cultivate in this book, is what fuels us at Havas, perhaps best known for creating one of the most iconic and celebrated ad campaigns of all time, the most interesting man in the world for Dos Equis. As one of the world's largest integrated communications agencies, home to 19,000 people across more than 60 village offices in 100 countries, Havas uses that kind of creativity to help our clients create breakthrough work and unlock new sources of growth. And that approach has also helped us develop pioneering accelerator programs that open access for marginalized talent and advance women and people of color at a faster pace. Through these initiatives, we are helping to reinvent parental leave and mental wellness benefits and achieve pay equity across race and gender. Simply put, we will stop at nothing less than radically transforming the culture and the employee experience for the better. So far, the results of these innovative approaches to cultivating an inclusive growth culture are staggering, yielding a retention rate of more than twice the norm for the ad industry. That all started with a mindset. Yes, an innovation mindset, which, as Lorraine explains in these chapters, is the starting point for all meaningful change in your business and career, no matter what industry or field you are in. Lorraine's book offers a wealth of practical advice and a tested and true step-by-step approach on how to make your brainstorm a reality, whether it's a business, a service, or a game-changing idea. Women can lead that change. I'm seeing it happen from the front lines. Females are now the majority in Havas's group globally, a concept that would have seemed like a pipe dream nearly a decade ago. And I believe a similar transformation is happening in many sectors of our society. New product development, innovation, and entrepreneurship, predominantly male preserves in the past, are now opening up to a diverse group of underestimated people. And that's, of course, what we'd all like. A world where all innovators, where people with great ideas of any gender identity and any race or background are welcome and encouraged. A charming and illustrative anecdote that Lorraine relates early in her book about how her father encouraged her to create her first innovation at a diner she and her family used to frequent when she was a child particularly resonated with me. I recently found my own sugar packet solution in leading the development of a breakthrough innovation for Havas by becoming, along with such forward-thinking and concerned companies as Patagonia, Allbirds, and Athleta, a certified B Corporation that places equal emphasis on people, planet, and profit, and uses business as a measurable force for good. If achieving such lofty goals sounds like an unreachable dream to you, then you most assuredly need this book. For innovators, there are no limits. If you want to soar to new heights, if you're interested in innovating around the highest priorities and needs of our world today, if you're curious about what led to some of the greatest inventions of our time, or if you're simply looking to unlock your own business-building, new product-developing potential, follow Lorraine's practical guide to mobilize your own innovation mindset. Word of caution as you dive in, you just might change the world. Laura Manis, Chief Executive Officer, Havas, New York. ny.havas.com. annex88.com. Most Innovative Culture, DigiDay 2018. Best Places to Work, Ad Age 2019 and 2021. Best Collaborative Agency Team, Ad Exchanger 2020. CEO of the Year Finalist and Network Agency of the Year, The Drum 2021. Introduction. How sweet it is, the spark of a great idea. Several years ago, I found myself standing in front of a group of 96 executives from a Fortune 100 corporation. We were in one of those cavernous conference rooms at a corporate meeting center, dimly lit to accommodate the parade of slide presentations that preceded my talk, which was after the morning break. The executives were sitting at round tables to facilitate group discussion, but most were intent on their mobile screens, seemingly oblivious to the presence of the colleagues around them. They didn't seem like an energized, forward-looking group, and that might have been part of the reason for bringing them together that day. Like so many others, this corporation, a major player in the pharmaceutical industry, was acquiring most of its intellectual property, products, and services from academia, small companies, and co-development collaborations with peers. The CEO believed his executives could be trained in the science and art of generating new ideas. He wanted to create a culture of innovation, one that would flow down like a waterfall from him to the executives to their teams. My job was to show them what that looked like. A culture that would embrace new ideas and encourage creativity, an organization that, when properly tapped, could produce a torrent of free-flowing, fresh ideas worthy of satisfying customers and making it to market. It's what I call the innovation mindset. The name of my session that morning, How to Innovate Without Fail, promised a process that could be followed from inception to market. I suspected the executives were expecting a formula they could execute after lunch and without too much effort. Some were probably hoping the CEO's latest obsession with innovative cultures would blow over. But I knew that he was onto something, regardless of whether his management team was on board. And before I could get them excited, before I could show them that, in my opinion, their CEO was absolutely right in pointing this ship in the direction of change, I needed to know more about them. I started out by asking the distracted executives to rate, on a scale of 1 to 10 with 10 as the highest, their level of general curiosity. Most raised their hands at 4 or 5. No one was higher than a 7. So not that curious. I then asked them to think back to when they were 12 or 13 years old. "What were you dreaming about?" I asked. "How curious were you then? What were you doing in your free time?" That question seemed to stir something in this incurious bunch. I saw a few brows wrinkle and a few eyes gaze off, conjuring up images of long ago. My friends and I hung out at the local firehouse. I wanted to be a fireman, one man volunteered. I guess I still do spend most of my day putting out fires other people make. A few people chuckled. "Well, I know one thing. I wasn't dreaming about sitting in meetings 12 hours a day," a woman in a crisp white blouse said. Some heads nodded in agreement. Point taken. I wanted to say, "Don't worry, I'm not going to waste your time." But now others had raised a hand, wanting to speak. The head of engineering, wearing a white polo with the corporate insignia, grabbed the mic. "My uncle helped me make glue for my science fair project in 6th grade, and that experience stayed with me," he said. "I ended up in chemical engineering. I like figuring out how things work." A couple of others spoke up. One guy, fascinated with robots as a kid and working in logistics, said he'd love to see the company invest in drone technology. A woman, about 50 years old, raised her hand and made eye contact with me. I nodded for her to speak. "My mom died from breast cancer when I was 14. I decided to go into cancer research as a result. I'm a breast cancer survivor with a 16-year-old daughter. I'm doing this for my family and all the patients and families affected by cancer." She had shared a deeply personal testimony in front of a large group of colleagues. I thanked her for her courage. I sensed the mood had suddenly shifted. This room of extremely accomplished professionals, nominated, whether they liked it or not, by the executive team to participate in a 2-day retreat on innovation, seemed to have been shaken out of their torpor. A handful seemed tuned into their passion and willing to talk about it. The rest now seemed less interested in their text messages and more attentive to what I might have to say. "That's great, thanks," I continued. "We've all taken circuitous routes to get where we are today. But often, the spark that led us to what we really wanted to do was lit long ago, as some of you just shared. That's what happened to me. Except I'd forgotten about that spark and had to rekindle it several years ago when I was stuck in a job that had lost its meaning." I paused. I guess we've all been in that kind of situation. A few nods. I imagined that one or two naysayers in this room were still wondering why they were being forced to listen to another consultant telling them something they thought they already knew. But I could see that the audience, having heard some of their colleagues offer up formative childhood memories, now seemed more intent, perhaps even eager, to hear if the innovation consultant had something new to offer. I started by doing just what I'd asked them to do. I shared a story from my own childhood. "It's really a story about my father," I said. "My dad, Garland Hudson, was an inventor, innovator, and serial entrepreneur. He dreamed, talked, and obsessed about inventions from as far back as I can remember until he took his last breath in 2006. He solved big problems like industrial sanitation and little frustrations like how to transfer gasoline from the car to the lawnmower. His solution to the latter? He developed a portable handheld pump called the Portapump. Growing up, whenever my dad observed a problem, he would challenge my brother and me to devise at least 3 solutions. We then had to defend the pros and cons of each. Dad brought that lesson about product innovation home one morning at the Hot Shops cafeteria in Wheaton, Maryland. I was 13, and my little brother Greg was 10. As I related the anecdote to the audience, my mind went back to that summer day long ago when, whether I knew it or not, the seeds of my own innovation mindset were first planted. Hold the sugar, recipe for a successful innovation. As we settled into the big red vinyl booth, my dad addressed Greg and me as if we were having a team meeting. "Now, I brought you here for a reason." "Would that reason be breakfast?" my brother asked. "All in due time," Dad replied. "We're here to figure out how to solve a problem."
"What kind of problem?" I asked, craning my neck over the booth at the bustling restaurant. "Things look like they're running pretty well."
"Ah," said Dad, "but looks can be deceiving." For 3 mornings in a row during that sweltering hot week in August, we sat in the booth eating a breakfast of scrambled eggs and orange juice, enjoying the air conditioning, a bit of a luxury in those days, and watching the breakfast traffic. Our assignment? Observe how long it took to clear a table for the next customer. We jotted down notes in our marble composition books and used our 4-color pens to draw stick figure pictures and diagrams. We concluded that the biggest impediment to speedy cleanup was the trash created by the sugar packets kept on the table. We'd noticed that people crumpled the wrappers and threw them on the tables, spewing granules everywhere. Others threw the half-empty packets in the booths or even on the floor, where they had to be swept up.
"What a mess," Greg said.
"Seriously?" I questioned. "There are Cool Pop wrappers all over your room." Greg frowned. Dad clinked his spoon on the white coffee cup. He loved using sounds to get our attention.
"Let's focus on the problem," he said. "Cleanup is taking too much time, and now we may know why. What's next?"
Under Dad's guidance, we spent the next week brainstorming solutions. We considered eliminating the sugar packets and replacing them with a sugar dispenser, putting a trash can at each table so cleanup could be faster, putting bottled liquid sugar on the Lazy Susan alongside the maple syrup and ketchup. We had about half a dozen solutions. With Dad's encouragement,
"It's always important to talk to those closest to the problem," he advised.
We talked to the manager and to a couple of waitresses to get their input. They were amused at first.
"Mr. Hudson, why are you and your kids so interested in sugar packets?" asked the manager, Esther, who was stout with blonde hair in a neat bun, after I'd fired some questions at her.
"We're trying to solve your problem," I cut in as assuredly as if I were already a paid Hot Shops consultant.
"What problem?" The manager looked suspicious.
My dad assuaged any fears the manager might have had.
"The food is great and we love coming here," he said. "But I'm teaching the kids a lesson about how to solve problems and create new solutions. And we have an idea that might help you. See that line of people outside in the heat waiting to get in here for breakfast?"
The manager looked out the window and nodded.
"I can't keep busboys more than a week since the new Friendly's ice cream parlor opened in the mall. The waitresses are complaining about having to bus their own tables."
We now had the manager's attention. Her customers were unhappy about waiting lines, but her waitresses were even more unhappy about added work. To this day, I remember thinking my dad was the smartest person in the world at that moment. He had observed the manager's problem and talked to her about it with genuine interest and concern. But even better, we had some ideas about how to help fix things. Our interaction with our client, the manager, gave us renewed enthusiasm for our project. We kept generating ideas. When one idea didn't make sense, sugar in a dispenser was too tempting for bored kids, my dad showed us how to pivot and move in a different direction. The idea we took to prototype, and yes, my dad actually introduced us to that term, was a small, plastic, cube-shaped receptacle that sat on the table. We called it the sugar cube, and to ensure it had value beyond just holding filled packets and empty wrappers, we designed it to display advertising,
adding a new potential revenue stream for hot shops. My dad scheduled a meeting with the manager right before school started in September so we could demonstrate how the sugar cube with the hot shop's logo worked. My role was to review our research, showing our diagrams and charts with timings of table turnover. And, of course, we simulated the process of using the sugar cube. My mom, Polly, joined us for the sales pitch. Dad called her the closer, and she lived up to the title. Wearing the smart navy dress she saved for special occasions, she pointed out the features and benefits of the product while we demonstrated it. Dad with a cup of coffee, and Greg and I with unsweetened iced tea. The manager loved it. The sugar cube hadn't solved all her problems, but it was a start. Not only did we put it in her store, but in several others in the area, too. With Dad's guidance, we had taken our first product to market. Dad was proud. Looking back now, I realize I had found my calling. Introducing the innovation mindset. Most of the audience seemed to have been listening keenly to my story. Some were even smiling. Maybe they knew hot shops or had a kid brother named Greg or remembered what it was like to be 13 and in awe of your dad. But this was a tough audience. One woman scowled. It was as if I could read her mind. She thinks we're supposed to be impressed that she invented a product when she was a kid. My intention, of course, was not to impress, but to instruct. Specifically, to instruct about problem solving, which is at the heart of the innovation process. So what did I learn from that experience? I asked the audience rhetorically. Problem solving was a good skill to have, and it was fun. Problems are all around us, and we can find ways to make things better if we put our minds to it. Solutions that meet a customer's need, one they're willing to pay for, have the highest chance of commercial success. I've spent my life, my career, and my personal time helping to bring new treatments and services to patients. If I ever find myself getting off track, I remind myself of that story. I encourage you to jot down some of your earliest memories of being creative, feeling inspired. It will help spark your creativity and fuel your inspiration as you develop new ideas and new solutions. I then introduced a tabletop exercise designed to practice problem solving. I gave each table a problem to solve and a collection of gadgets, Legos for adults, with instructions to add, subtract, and combine the parts to come up with different solutions. To make the exercise more engaging, I introduced a competition for the best ideas in different categories. Heads started nodding, and people started examining the pieces on the table. Someone turned the lights up and the slide projector off. I noticed that mobile devices were face down on the table. That talk and the exercises we did that day were an introduction to what I call the innovation mindset, the state of mind I first learned in the hot shops and have adopted in my work as a pharmaceutical and technology executive, a consultant, and an academician who studies and teaches the art and science of innovation. To create meaningful change, to be innovative, we have to first adopt the right posture, the right attitude. An innovation mindset emanates from a problem-solving culture coupled with personal curiosity, passion, and natural talents. From there, you have a springboard to explore an area where you can understand and empathize with customers' needs and develop solutions they want. It all comes together once you understand what you're good at, what the customer needs, and the impact you want to have. Consider these stories that led to marketed products and services. You'll also notice that each was a response to frustration with the status quo. An engineer with a grandmother who had severe arthritis in her hands and couldn't hold a needle to inject herself with insulin decided to experiment with an insulin-delivering skin patch. A self-employed businessman, frustrated by the high cost of booking flights at the last minute, created software that lets customers bid for seats on flights of their
Sample complete. Ready to continue?